Ayo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music on the air and in your ear. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo, and I'm joined by the King of the Casters. He's Mr. Brett Podcast. But Brett, once again, despite our overly bombastic nicknames, it isn't about us at all. Who is it about?
Oh, this time it's about somebody that I know both of us are super excited to have on. This is a gentleman who's been doing songs for movies for years now. I mean, he's done a couple of our favorite singles, In the Touch and Dare from the Transformers, Kickboxer soundtrack, like, on so many albums, so many good songs, and his new song is called The 80s. It's Stan Bush. Stan, we're so excited to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be with you guys.
I don't know if you can hear it in our voices, but when we say we are so excited to talk to you, we're not kidding. The honor is definitely ours.
Oh, it's nice to be with you. I hope you're doing good up there.
For sure.
I'm down here in sunny LA, so it's pretty nice at the moment.
Well, not it's not hot. Here, but we won't talk about that then.
Yeah. We won't talk about that, okay.
Yeah, we're losing out right now in the weather issue, but that's okay.
All right.
Let's get to the 80s.
Yeah.
Please, Brett, go ahead.
Yeah, because the 80s, I mean, I got to say, like, I was just clicking around, and I saw the 80s. It was probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago when it got released, and I had to listen to it right away, and I loved the song. And so we got to talk about how it came about, and I mean, it does feel like kind of an anthem for us.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, the 80s, well, let me just tell you a little background. I mean, I never left the 80s. I'm still in the 80s, you know. I'm just talking about musically. I love that stuff. I miss the movies, and remember back then, like every movie was a soundtrack, you know. They had like songs that were just key parts of the movie, and also they were songs that you remember, you know. The chorus would be like, wow, you know, and you'd walk out of the movie like humming the song, that kind of thing, you know. I love that. So
well,
anyway, it's just kind of where I live. I sort of never grew out of it. When music sort of imploded in the rock music, I mean, in the early 90s, and the grunge thing came in, it was kind of like, wow, what happened? You know, everybody was like, that was quick. And then, but fortunately for me, I had like a following over in Europe and Japan and some other places. So I was able to keep doing what I did, you know, through that whole period. So anyway, but I never really transitioned out of it, you know. So for me, it's kind of, like I say, it's still, the dream still lives on.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, it's like, because it's good music, and it's good music with a good message as well.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, it's a very positive song. Like, just, you just feel good, you know, when I'm just like smiling when I'm singing. We did a music video also. It's going to be a few weeks before it's done and edited and all that and coming out. So, you know, it's one of those things you can't sort of hurry up some things. You have to kind of wait until they're developed. But the thing has been shot, the music video, and it's going to be really cool. The just a little, give you a little teaser on that. My, you know, in the song lyric, I'm talking about like remembering the good old days sort of thing, right? Looking back. And then, so anyway, the person who plays in the video, the person who plays the younger me, is my son.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, he's with this gorgeous, you know, actress girlfriend that plays his girlfriend, and he's got his band guys around him, and it's just a really cool thing. So I'm thrilled to see it, excited to see it, and it's going to be intercut with like performance footage. You know, I have a band on a soundstage, my band here in L.A., and from what I've seen, it looks really good. The video does. So,
yeah, we were actually just talking.
Wish it was ready now to put out. You know.
Yeah, because we were wondering if there was a video for it. We were poking around the internet looking to see. But so that's great to know that we can anticipate that.
Yeah. I it's just the timing is kind of, you know, like I wanted it to get it out for the summer because it's, you know, it's kind of a summery song, you know, and all that. But it'll come when it comes, I guess. But yeah, I really do appreciate you guys, enthusiasm and so forth. You know, it means the world to me to, know that people out there really care about what I do and stuff. It means a lot, appreciate that, guys.
Well, for sure. Go ahead, Mo.
Yeah. The thing about the song is, what we love about it is how well it does capture the 80s, not just in the sound, but the lyrics, right? And the things you're talking about there. And the 80s had it's so hard to describe because despite a decade which had certainly its decadence and debauchery, there's also still a purity and innocence to it that's there at the same time. And even when we talk to musicians who are, on the Sunset Strip, where certainly the debauchery was at its height, and yet they talk about it with, and that kind of innocence and purity kind of still manages to come across when they talk about the era and even in the clubs and such there. And I think this song does a really good job of kind of capturing that feeling and making us, taking us back to it. And that's what it is about the song that I love so much.
Oh, thanks. That's nice to hear. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's the song was just pretty recent. I wrote it, just a few months, like 3 months ago or something like that. And then we recorded it right away, and it just came out so good. Like I say, it's the first song of the new album, the next album that's coming. But there have been like three more since then, three or four more. And a couple more that haven't been recorded yet. So we're like I say, still in somewhat early stages as far as the album, the new album that's going to come. It'll probably be like spring of 2020, I guess, if I had to guess. So, but I just thought, I didn't really want to wait that long until the new song, until the 80s song came out. I thought, let's just get it out there because it's got a cool message. And I just thought, to me, I just love it. But thank you so much. Hey, it's nice to hear that other people agree. Hey, he likes his own song.
Well, it's true, though. I mean, people often associate a positivity to your music. I mean, it's something about the style of the music. It's not even, your lyrics are positive, but I honestly believe, like, if you were to produce an album that was all no voices, all instrumental, as no voices, as Brian Wilson told us that it's called, not in the personal interview, just when we saw him at concert. I wish we could have talked to Brian Wilson. Are you kidding me? But yeah, I mean, if you did an all instrumental album, I still think it would come across as that kind of inspirational, heart pumping, positive vibe.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's cool. It's like major keys and all that sort of thing. It's and again, I know I've probably said this in interviews before, but to me, it's like I've always been about the positive. It kind of started with The Touch. It was like, people, it's a cool thing, because people, want to believe in themselves and they know they're capable of doing great things and whatnot. This sort of thing. It's just a good message to hear. There's enough negativity in the world already, I think, anyway, that The Touch kind of kicked off this whole, for me, this sort of vibe where, I try to write songs like that, it's just, I don't know. And not like I say, not all my songs, there's love songs or other things too, but it was kind of cool because the 80s was a totally different, it doesn't have anything about fighting or battling or anything, but it's a really, just thank you though. I'm glad you guys like it.
Yeah. Well, and how must it feel to know that when you did The Touch and Dare and to think about them being, cause I think about seeing the Transformers animated movie and hearing those songs. And I mean, I love that soundtrack. Absolutely. And I've loved it for like decades. And like, and when I needed to show that movie to my son because this is like, oh, you're going to love the soundtrack. It's a great soundtrack. It's got The Touch. It's got Dare. And like, what's it like to know that there's this like, generation of fans that really latched onto those songs?
Oh, it's very cool actually, cause it, it just, I don't know, right? Like I go to the Transformers conventions and so forth, and you know, I hear this stuff, it's like, man, and it's like, you know, I don't know, it just, they just kind of happened, and the whole thing sort of came together. I remember that when I was, when the movie was out, the original Transformers movie, the Ninja Turtles were actually a bigger deal then, you know, that kind of thing. You never know what's going to happen and what's going to end up sort of having, you know, like I say, longevity and so forth. And but the Transformers really became a phenomenon and for almost a cult following for a long, long time, and then sort of resurfaced as this mega, you know, brand. And but it's been a really cool ride, you know, being associated with the whole deal. And like I say, I've done a lot of things with Hasbro and a lot of conventions, and it's kind of cool, you know. It's like, if you're going to be associated with like one or two songs like that, it's cool that they're positive songs, you know. And but yeah, it's fun. And the people at these conventions are awesome. You know, they're the fans. They really love that stuff. And you know, it's just great. It's a great thing. It's all good, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that fine people.
Go ahead, Brett.
Oh, I was going to say, like, and it's interesting how the Touch has managed to go into, like, so many more projects as well. I mean, and even, you know, to hear it in Boogie Nights and stuff like that. I mean, just the fact that it can...
Yeah, that was funny.
Get this other life, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you knew this, but a year and a half ago, I was did a Transformers convention back east. It was a HasCon. And in Providence, Rhode Island. And anyway, backstage before my concert there, let's see, Mark Wahlberg comes off stage. He had done a panel there, and he was walking by and backstage, and I said, "You got the Touch." He turns around and says, "How did I do in Boogie Nights?" I said, "It was great." Anyway, a couple minutes later, he comes over with his phone and starts singing alongside me. We're just standing backstage like a couple of drunk guys singing the Touch. It was really funny. And he posted on his Facebook, and you know, gets like, you know, 500,000 views in a matter of, you know, an hour or two. It was really cool. He didn't have to do that. You know, he's a good guy. So.
Yeah, I got to admit, though, I do prefer your version.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think it was deliberately the way it was. It was kind of a spoof on the 80s and all. But it's funny because, you know, it's such a weird coincidence, too, because, you know, not only did he star in Boogie Nights and sing the Touch, but then he becomes the leading man in the new Transformers, the newer Transformers movies, you know,
yeah.
The Basums. So it's all kind of cool how it all came like full circle and whatnot, you know.
Yeah, it's funny that all that, the way that works. And yeah, it was awesome, of course, hearing it in Bumblebee as well. And like,
oh,
you
I know, right?
Like, yeah. I agree. Like, Bumblebee is a really good Transformers movie.
I love Bumblebee. I thought it was great. But yeah, that was awesome how they used it in that movie.
This brings about a couple of questions for me.
Sure.
Number one, the you know, you talk about the movie, you know, and seeing it in the movie the first time, I guess I guess you didn't, or finding out, because the movie, the song The Touch was originally done for Cobra, and that was out there, the Sylvester Stallone movie Cobra, and I'm guessing that was taken by Heart of America's Son by John Cafferty was probably the song they ended up using instead.
I think so.
Yeah, and which is also, you know, good song, but The Touch ended up where it was supposed to be, which was in the Transformers
right.
movie. And you know, there is a purpose to it all, right? For some reason.
That's
right.
Something. Yeah, you know, I remember we were a little disappointed at the time. The record label came back and said, "Oh, it's in this cartoon movie about robots," and we said, "What?" You know, little did we know, right?
I think
this big phenomenon.
People might remember the Transformers movie more positively than Cobra. I don't know. Stallone's best piece of work. But
you're right, though. Things work out for a reason, don't they?
They really do. And you know, that song was obviously you didn't create it for the actual soundtrack then. So I'm guessing you had no actual knowledge about the movie or what was coming. Basically, what I'm asking is, you didn't know that Optimus Prime was going to die and that a bunch of kids were going to go home from that movie crying, because that if you knew it, hold on to. What a burden you had to hold on to all that.
That's right. I wouldn't have slept for weeks. No, it's like a Bambi deal, right? Where, you know, and the Bambi was like crazy. You know, people were really sad because Bambi dies in the movie, and that was like Disney, you know, right? So, but it's but I guess, you know, life lessons are important. You know, for a lot of these kids, especially that grew up with the cartoon Transformers movie, I think like Optimus Prime was almost a father figure. That's what I kind of heard from people, you know, that, like, I don't know, it was like a really neat, I think everybody, you know, takes films to heart, and you know, you get lessons and so forth from them, and, you know, it's all about, life is about growth and stuff in the end, I guess.
Well, I remember my friend calling me up, I think I was 13 or something like that, when that movie came out, and or maybe 12 or something like that, and we were looking forward to it, and, you know, my friend calls me up, and he had already seen it, it's on first day, and goes, Optimus Prime dies. I'm like, well, that's it, I'm not going now, you know, like, yeah. Like, say what? You know, but eventually, of course, you see it and come to appreciate, you know, that movie is just it's a zeitgeist. It captured a moment in time.
That's great.
The other thing is, kind of curious, at conventions, what do people bring up to you to get signed? Do they bring up actual Transformers themselves?
Well, sometimes there are posters and so forth that are printed at these events, and some I'll like sign the poster and that kind of thing, or for the event or for the convention. Also, a lot of it I'll have CDs with me that I, you know, will sign somebody's CD and things if they buy one of my later albums and so forth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
they
but
don't
I'll sign anything.
You'll sign anything. Even though they bring up one of those.
Well,
knockoffs.
Almost anything. We won't go beyond that, okay?
One of those knockoff Transformers up here, like, why not?
Yeah. It's
Astro's trying to get that down. You're like, it's a nice toy.
Yeah. I can just see it. Yeah, you got the touch. There you go. Thanks.
Yeah. One guy asked me to sign so-and-so, so you don't have the touch. It was funny. It's like self-deprecating, you know. That's only happened once, but
well,
anyway.
You know, I do appreciate that you still signed that for me.
Yeah.
Now, you've done a lot of other soundtracks as well, especially in the 80s. Like, I mean, I talked about Kickboxer, and then there's Bloodsport and stuff like that. So how did a lot of those start coming around for you?
Well, actually, let's see, Bloodsport and Kickboxer, I was really just hired as a vocalist to come in for those two films, and there were like three songs in each movie, and, you know, I was like, okay, sing these songs, and so, okay, so, you know, but actually, one of the songs, the Kickboxer movie, there was a song, Never Surrender, and that was written by Lenny Macaluso, who co-wrote The Touch with me, so, you know, I knew him from that, you know, and, but yeah, it kind of all worked out. I ran into, Van Damme at a club I was playing at, and the bouncers were giving him a problem getting in. So I went over, let this guy in. Anyway, he comes over later and thanks me. And I said, told him who I was. And he said, oh, wow. He said, talking about the first movie, Bloodsport, he said something about the music was better than the movie. I don't know why he said that, but he was a nice guy, you know.
I cannot. I'm kind of caught off guard to hear he was having trouble getting in.
Well, they didn't know who he was, is what the deal was. But it was like some big outdoor bar that I played at for a long time.
Wow.
But
that's still.
It was funny because he was like being a little bit flirty with my wife at the time, you know, at the screening of Kickboxer, and. It's like, who is this guy? You know, then she sees him up on the screen. This guy's shirt off and all. Oh, you know? It's like, you know.
Oh, that's who that guy is.
But that was, but those movies were cool. I like that stuff. You know, it was funny because, you know, you didn't know at the time. I mean, he had a lot of great movies, great career and everything, but you know, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, it's just going to be like another Stallone and, Schwarzenegger deal, or you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the martial arts genre is a little different. They weren't as mainstream as some of the other films. But you were talking about 80s anthems. I mean, to me, my all-time favorite song of that kind of genre is the Rocky one, you know, Survivor, you know, Eye of the Tiger.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What a great song.
Yeah, I
that's
mean,
just a killer.
For sure. And again, okay. another guy who writes amazing music, Jim Peterik, in that regard. Like his.
I know. Jim's awesome. He's a really good guy, too. I met him in Europe. We were hanging out because I opened for Survivor, and I think it was 1994. But yeah, he was cool. I did an interview with him together and hung out a little bit and stuff in Germany.
Yeah, yeah, Jim's been on the show, and you're absolutely right.
Oh,
an amazing guy. Oh. Yeah, that was.
He's always been a great song. Yeah. Great songwriter. Yeah, he's really good.
But yeah, and so yeah, and I know you've worked with a lot of other great songwriters as well. I mean, like, well, Paul Stanley and stuff like that. So how does that come around?
Well, let's see. I went in the studio with my producer back in the 90s. I worked with him for two or three albums we did together, and he had been working with Paul Stanley, and they actually got me in to sing one of the songs that they had written together. And so I met him, good guy. I had also worked with, like, Jim Vallance, talking about Canadians, and
yep.
Who co-wrote all the Bryan Adams stuff. And in fact, you know, and Aerosmith too. He's really good songwriter, and that was in Vancouver. And of course, I also worked with Jonathan Cain when Journey broke up. We worked together, wrote and recorded a few songs, and that was, you know, we were maybe going to do a band thing at the time, but then they right after that was when they got Bad English going, so that they wound up getting that band together with John Waite. You know, it's kind of a baby's reunion, but Jonathan's a great songwriter. And I noticed something cool about those two guys too. Talking about Jim Vallance and Jonathan Cain, those guys work. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people, they'll mess around in the studio for a couple hours and then they'll go hang out and do something else. But those guys will work 10, 12 hours a day. You know, it's just kind of a, I don't know. It's that old thing about genius being 90% work, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're just really, really dedicated, you know. It's cool.
Yeah, well, and I've heard that before in talking to other people, where it's just like kind of breaking down the secrets of songwriting, and just because Kane Roberts, who played with Alice Cooper, when we talked to him, it was that idea of, like, because he's worked with a lot of guys like Desmond Child and Diane Warren, stuff like that. And
yeah, I worked with I sang on Kane Roberts' album. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and
back
so
in, yeah, back in yeah.
So yeah, it's that
yeah,
idea.
What were you guys saying?
Well, it's that idea of, like, how these premier songwriters work, and yeah, it's absolutely that, like, they're going to start at a certain time,
they put
and they're
time
gonna
in. Yeah,
and they're just gonna whatever they come out with, they come out with. Yeah. But
yeah, and you know, looking back, if I have any issue that I, like, some of my earlier writing is, you know, I gave up too soon on the lyrics. You know what I mean? Like, I learned that finally learned it after years and years. Of writing, like, mediocre lyrics on some of the songs. It's like, if you put the time in and really work, you know, lyrics are hard, but, you know, if you really put the time in, they get better and better, you know. Like, Don Henley's one of my favorite artists, my favorite songwriter pretty much of all time. And he, that guy, you know, I've heard he'll work on a lyric for like 6 months or something, you know, or whatever, to get it just right.
Well,
I don't know.
Like, do you ever...
I believe it.
Do you ever just, like, take the songs and, like, kind of write the full lyric and then kind of put it away for a while and then come back to it?
Yes, that really does help, too. It's, like, also that thing of, like, just go ahead and put something down, right, and then come back and rewrite it, you know, or like, fix the lines later, the crappy lines. You rewrite the, you know what I mean? You keep
mm-hmm.
honing it, you know, and it, but, yeah, that's really true.
Yeah, because I think you could probably realize, like, which lines are the crappy lines, but you know that there's probably
well,
some, you know, that are good,
you know,
lines.
And again, that's a big part of it. It's not only just like you're some magical gifted person or something, but I'm talking about just songwriting in general. But it's just recognizing when you do have something good. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, this is cool. You know, and you know, if you. I guess you understand what I'm saying, you know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
you can't always find it, but you know it when you see it, kind of thing, you know, I'm talking about you know, whatever, something, whether something's like good or not, you know.
You're not talking about pornography. I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. That is true.
You know it when you see it. You can't always define it, but you can. Yeah, that's true.
It's
like a song like Heart of the Matter, for instance. Like, it's a great song. What about that song that everybody recognizes it's great? Or like your song by Elton John, you know, like it's just, it's hard to define, you know, what makes a great song, but you know, it's one of those things where I think people universally will recognize like something really great or not, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of,
like a lot of pop music's very simple. And like when I saw the Star Is Born movie, like I've always, you know, I'm not really a big Lady Gaga person, but I saw her on the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And it's like, she sat down on piano and started playing some ballads. And I was like, wow, she's really good. Mm-hmm. And of course that movie Star Is Born is a very similar thing. Like her dance pop stuff. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. It's good. You know, but then she sits down on piano and it's just wonderful. You know, it's like these amazing songs start coming out. She's always been a great singer, but I don't know. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, because it stops being like top 40 pop, and it becomes like you know, because there's over processed music, which feels like a lot of the top 40 stuff, and then there's honestly playing an instrument and singing.
And it's actually a shame
she's
because
not just a pop dance artist. She's a real artist, you know, a true artist when she sits down and plays one of her, you know, ballads and sings the crap out of it. And it's just like really well-constructed, well-written song. It's like great lyrics and melody. And she's, you know, it's just over the top. I think that's where she shines. That's just my humble opinion.
Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting you bring her up because, I had the same experience with her, but she went on to the Howard Stern show and she performed on the piano there. And that was many years ago, probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, something like that. Quite a while ago when she was still, you know, and she had these songs and she performed the same songs that had been on the radio that I kind of went, okay, that's fine, you know, but it's not really my thing. And so I never heard the content behind it because of how they're produced and how they do the songs nowadays. The content and the message behind it never resonated with me in the same way until I could actually hear her just kind of stripped down, able to perform it. And I went, okay, not only can she sing and she really can, but there's something behind those lyrics more than I was giving it credit for.
That's right. Yeah. When you sit down with just a piano or just a guitar and you sing the song, then you see the song. Then the song is there. It's not, it doesn't have production to rely on to get it across. You know, it's like, it's either a great song or it's not, you know, and that's the proof in the pudding deal, you know, I guess. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brett.
I was going to say, is that kind of what you do then when you're writing? Like, do you sit down with the piano or with the guitar? Like, and how much of the instrumentation do you do on your albums?
Well, early albums, I used to play all the guitars or most of them, and then it got less and less. There's so many killer players, and it's like, it's, you know. But no, I do write on acoustic guitar. That's just, I just sit down with acoustic guitar and write, you know. But it's weird. I mean, I've sort of figured out in the last, you know, 20 years or so that, you know, I write and sing, but mainly my voice is my main thing, you know, and even though I play guitar all my life, it's just not, you know, it's better to just hire guys for that stuff. But my producer is like a big part of what I do. He's my best friend, and he's from Germany. He's been here like 25 years or something, 28, maybe almost 30 years, but we've been friends a long time, and he's produced the last 4 albums of mine and 5 albums, maybe 5. We're working on the 5th one now, I think, together. But he's just tremendous, great guitar player. And anyway, but yeah. So yeah, I have to let you guys know when the new album comes out. I'll get back in touch and, you know, maybe we'll do another powwow or something if you're around.
Oh yeah, no. For sure. We are
you kidding?
Always like all you got to do is
that'd be
like
great. No.
Is let me know and we'll be ready to go. So.
Actually, I wonder if we can bring up ask you about a couple of my favorite Stan Bush songs because there's a couple that I just really love and wonder if you could tell me about them. And one is and now the name escapes me, of course. Do It All Over. Do It All Over I think Do It All Over is a great song. So if
thank you.
Just kind of, you know, tell me a little bit about that song, because I think people, it's easy for people to listen to The Touch and Dare and they know it, but I'd like them to check out some of that other stuff, and that's one of my absolute favorites.
Oh, that's cool. No, I've never heard anybody say that one about that song. I mean, you know, it's just it's one of the cuts on one of the albums, but if I could do it all over, things would be different then, that kind of thing. But thanks. No, that's I remember I liked that song too. I can't really say much about it. It was just one of those songs that kind of came out. I think I wrote it with Kurt Cuomo, who's again the guy who was friends with Paul Stanley and so forth.
Yeah, for sure.
He also worked with Eddie Money, produced his stuff. But yeah, and what was the other song?
Well, another one was "Everybody Needs a Hero." That's
right.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic song.
Thank you. Yeah, that was just one of those sort of personal acoustic guitar. I was kind of like, I think that was in the 90s. I was doing a thing, like kind of doing more of a Henley type of thing a little bit, you know, just, trying to get more artsy and so forth. I think I got away from the power rock thing for a bit.
Well, it seems like such a personal song, you know. The lyrics seem so personal, and that's and the same thing. Another one from the same album is "If We Ever." I think that's actually my favorite song of yours. It's got such a unique composition that I just really, really appreciate that song.
Yeah, that's got that blue collar thing, you know, where the you guys like he's like a little bit like Living on a Prayer, you know, where the guys. He's just him and his girlfriend are just working stiffs and they really want to get away and, you know, have a better life, you know, but they have to keep, you know, struggling, that kind of thing. It's like a blue collar us against the world deal, you know, but thank you. Yeah. I like that one too.
Yeah. It speaks to me. Cause I mean, most of my life, you're always looking for better. Like, am I reaching my potential? Can I do more? What else is out there? And it spoke to me
in that way. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think everybody has dreams, you know, and, you know, that's, you do what you can and, you know, you have to be realistic. You can't just, you know, drop everything and go, go run off and do something totally crazy, but a lot of us do.
But if it works out, then great.
Sometimes you got to try.
That's right.
Very first time ever listened to Boulder. And it's available on the Google Music streaming service, and so I never had a chance to listen to that. So take me back. I guess that's your very first project, isn't it?
Yeah. I left Florida. That's where I grew up, and moved to Colorado back in the 70s, and 76, I think it was. And then we were like a recording band in Boulder, Colorado. We eventually got signed after a couple of years. We got signed to LA. Elektra Records, and then came out to LA, and that band changed our name to Boulder when we came to LA and did that one album, and then after that the band broke up, so not much happened with it, but the other guys are still, I'm still in touch with a couple of them, the guitar player's still out here, and that was a interesting project.
It's got a lot of the same sound, but not quite the energy I think that you were able to find as a solo artist.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that, like I say, it's just one of those things that it was a learning experience. I wasn't even the main singer in the band. You know, it was funny because, the singer, he's still singing with another group, but he's great. I mean, like I say, but I think that band, again, we were trying to do something we weren't really, wasn't really suiting us, you know, like for a long time, we were trying to do like jazzy kind of stuff and try to do like a Steely Dan thing or something, or I don't know what we were doing, but, we started trying to be a rock band, and then, that's when we got signed. But again, like I say, the album didn't come across the producer. We had problems with the producer and that kind of thing. Usual story, you know, you come out to LA, do one album, and then the band breaks up. So, at least being a solo artist, you could say, what happened to Stan, though? He broke up.
Yeah, don't break up.
It was funny because that second album I did the one for CBS, it was just called Stan Bush, and then the second one after that, it was the second solo album, was the Stan Bush and Barrage, the one with Touch and all that. So, and it just sort of worked out that one sort of got traction, especially in Europe, and with the Transformers movie and so forth. And I don't know, I just got to kind of made a name for myself a bit. And it just, after that, it just didn't seem like, then it never worked out for me to join a band. I mean, I considered it many times, but, it was always kind of like, oh, well, he's a solo artist, you know? So, oh, okay. Less problems that way.
Yeah. I suppose. Yeah. It's interesting. You talk about like becoming big in like getting a following in Europe and Japan and stuff like that. So what, you know, how, what went into that? Like, I guess for us as fans, like we don't, especially over here in Canada, like we're even like the, you know, the small version of the United States. Like we don't even get that much stuff that the United States gets. So how is it that, like, I know people are big, oh, much bigger over in Japan and stuff like that. What was that like?
Well, it was cool. I mean, the Touch was released as a single in Germany, and I had no idea. Like, I had a few people requesting interviews and things, but when I went over there for the first time to do like some sort of promo tour, I got off the plane in Berlin, and there was like, you know, 50 kids with my albums wanting out autographs. I was on some big TV show the next day, and just on and on. You know, it was like I was all of a sudden like a you know, not, I don't know, want to say famous, but you know, I was pretty known for a while there, and the UK also, but mainly Germany at the time. And you know, it was just, it was kind of a cool feeling, you know. The, did some tours and things over there, and, but like I say, that's when, and then after that, I was able to sort of keep things going recording wise, like during the 90s and all that, and into the 2000s, because, had a sort of developed a following, and, you know, overseas, Europe and Japan, and were able to keep doing what I do, you know. So.
Yeah, well, and it is great that you're able to keep releasing albums. I mean, you've done, you know, you tend to get to them once every few years, I see. So yeah, definitely 2020, perfect timing. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's cool. So let's see. Well, I will try to think. What I can do, I guess, is get back to you guys like towards the end of the year when the new album, I can give you a much better, clearer estimate of the release date and so forth, you know. And I'd love to schedule, you know, another powwow with you guys if you're around.
Yep.
And around, I should say.
We will most definitely be around in a boot.
That we will be. Well, I'll tell you what, yeah. Stan, then, you know what? What's the upcoming album? Does it have a title yet?
No, it's funny because I had thought about calling it the 80s, but then now the single the 80s is out, so I'll probably have to go with a different title song. But I think I know what it might be, but I don't want to tell you yet because I'm not sure yet.
that's fine.
Well, but so far, the new songs are coming out great.
Why don't you take this opportunity to just let everybody know where they can keep up with you, you know, what to check out, and everything that they should do so that they're prepared to know more about you for the next time you come on the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, they can check my website, stanbush.com, and to find out what's happening. And really enjoyed talking with you guys, and thank you so much for the support, and I really appreciate it. And,
thank you very much.
Keep in touch.
Here.
For sure.
Yeah, no pun intended.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, we will if we dare.
Okay. Thanks so much. Y'all take care.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Stan Bush. All the best, and we look forward to hearing the new album.
All the best. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now.
When I look back, we were just kids in a rock and roll band. We played like no tomorrow, didn't turn out like we planned. When I have a time, slips away.